What's up, beautiful people? It's Al Martin, your host of WKAR's Current Sports, and we're going to start the show a little bit different today because, hey, we have tickets to give away to you all. That's right. In my hand right now, I have a pair of MSU men's basketball tickets as well as women's basketball tickets. The women play tonight against Oakland, and the men will tip off against Oral Roberts tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 p.m. We're going to give away a pair of tickets right now at the top of the hour. This is for the men's basketball game versus Oral Roberts, MSU and Oral Roberts, tomorrow at 4:30. And we're going to go caller number 7, okay? So if you want these tickets, call in until you're caller number 7. The number is 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. With that being said, let's start the show.
From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
All right, all right, all right. We've got a great one in store for all of you out there. I can't believe it is already Friday. That's right, it's Friday, December 2nd, 2016. We've got a jam-packed show in store for all of our listeners out there. On today's show, we will chat with Jeremy Miller, head coach of the state championship Pomona Westphalia football team, the very first football championship in program history, as they were able to top Detroit Loyola over Thanksgiving break on Saturday in a 28-14 dub at Ford Field. You don't want to miss that. We will also invite Chris Solari, Michigan State beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, as Chris will discuss a big injury for the MSU men's basketball team, freshman phenom Miles Bridges. Can you believe that? We'll tell you how long Bridges is expected to be out in just a second. But Chris will touch on that, and he will also put in perspective what exactly we should take away from this past year's MSU football season. That's a loaded question, right? But Chris is going to try and tackle it and is also really dive into what to expect from this team next season. This was certainly a rebuilding year, but can MSU get back on track next season? So we'll have that. And also on the back end of the show, we'll chat about the MSU women's volleyball team hosting the first and second round of the NCAA Volleyball Championship. And we will, of course, have Reflection Friday for you. That and more, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Again, we are giving away tickets to the Michigan State men's basketball game that will take place tomorrow afternoon against Oral Roberts, a 4:30 p.m. tip time. Caller number 7 will win these tickets that I have in my hand right now, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Quick hit headliners. All right, and we start with that news concerning Miles Bridges, the do-everything, 6'7" freshie forward, will miss at least a couple of weeks with an ankle injury. Bridges was on crutches yesterday during practice, and his left ankle was in a walking boot. Now, Izzo said Bridges' ankle started hurting him after the Spartans lost to number 4 Duke. Now, with Bridges injured, the Spartans lose more height on that roster. MSU is already without 6'9" graduate transfer Ben Carter, as well as 6'9" forward Gavin Schilling. Izzo said Carter is likely done for the season with his second ACL injury in 2016. Schilling is nowhere close to a return, and if he does not progress quickly, he could sit out the rest of the season as well and take a medical redshirt. This leaves 6'8" Nick Ward and 6'6" Kenny Goins as MSU's two tallest healthy players. MSU women's basketball looks to bounce back tonight after a 75-64 loss to 20th-ranked Syracuse on Wednesday. The Spartans take on the Golden Grizzlies of Oakland at 7 p.m. The game will be broadcasted on BTN+. Senior guard Tori Jankowska continues to lead the team, averaging 21.8 points, 6.4 rebounds and 4.4 assists per game. Those numbers are good enough to put Jankowska on the early season Naismith watch. Now, Oakland, however, can put up plenty of points too, currently averaging 86.2 points per game, 11th in the nation in offensive scoring and scoring margin. Now, MSU has four more non-conference games left on the schedule after tonight's game. Finally, a break for Michigan State men's basketball. Only one loss shy of tying last year's final total of 5. But for what Sparty had to endure between traveling opponents, 4-4 is okay right now. They host Oral Roberts at 4:30 p.m. tomorrow without Bridges. It is a good time for MSU to find out who else can be a go-to scorer. Aaron Harris has been wildly inconsistent. Matt McQuaid isn't shooting enough, and fans have yet to see what Josh Langford is fully capable of. You'll get to know these players really, really well in the next few games here, especially with the absence of Bridges and before Big Ten play. Again, we are giving away tickets to that game against Oral Roberts. Caller number 7-517-355-9527. Michigan basketball has now dropped both games of their first two real tests of the year. South Carolina on the 23rd, where they only dropped 46 points in Virginia Tech this past Wednesday, where they squandered a 15-point lead. Zach Ervin and Derek Walton Jr. have been leading the Wolverine offense with 14.3 and 12.7 points per game, respectively. Now they will look to turn things around against Kennesaw State tomorrow, 1 p.m. The Spartan volleyball team opens its NCAA tournament as the number 9 seed tonight at Jenison Fieldhouse. MSU will face Fairfield at 7:30 p.m. The Spartans finished the regular season with a 24-8 record, ranked 15th in the country, good enough to host the first and second round of the tourney for the first time since 2003. The Fairfield Stags finished with a 28-5 record and 18-0 in the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, winning their last 22 matches. Now, Cleveland State versus Arizona is the other matchup in East Lansing tonight. Each winner will move on to Saturday's second round match that will be played at 7 p.m. All games will be streamed on MSUSpartans.com and Spartan Sports Network, and the winner of tomorrow's game will book a ticket to the Sweet 16. Oh, how sweet it is. All right, Indiana football head coach Kevin Wilson has resigned due to, quote, philosophical differences. Now, the AD said it has nothing to do with the performance of the football team and actually viewed this season as a positive. It was just that the two, quote, weren't on the same page, end quote. Although there has been rumblings about how he poorly treats his players and handles injuries, plus 5 IU players were interviewed by athletic department officials and university lawyers about Wilson's treatment of players. Now, defensive coordinator Tom Allen was given a 6-year deal to take over. The Detroit Red Wings lost to the Florida Panthers 2-1 in OT last night as their roller coaster season continues. Goaltender Peter Mrazek played well, stopping 28 out of 30 shots. Henrik Zetterberg started off the scoring for the Wings 1 minute and 23 seconds into the game, but the Wings didn't score after that. Now, forward Justin Applicator, former Spartan, left the game after getting hit and was wincing. He suffered an MCL sprain and is expected to miss 2 to 4 weeks. The Wings are currently 2 points out of the last wild card spot. Now, it's still early, but that is something to keep an eye on as the season progresses. The Wings will travel to Pittsburgh as they take on the Penguins on Saturday at 7 p.m. The Detroit Pistons play at the Atlanta Hawks tonight at 8 p.m. The Pistons have won 2 games in a row, whereas the Hawks have lost 4 straight. The Pistons currently hold the 8th best record in the Eastern Conference in a year. They were supposed to do much better. Now, it's still very, very, very early. Inconsistency has been a huge problem, though, for the Pistons so far this year. Center Andre Drummond will have his hands full with Hawks center Dwight Howard. Both Drummond and Howard are in the top 3 in rebounds per game in the NBA. Drummond averages a little over 13 boards per game, while Howard averages 12.9. The game will be televised on Fox Sports Detroit. And as we hinted on yesterday, the Mateen Cleaves case is still in court during the pretrial hearing. As the pretrial hearing moves on after the alleged victim took the stand roughly 24 hours ago, the woman claims Cleaves sexually assaulted her in a motel last fall after a golf outing, testifying that she twice ran out of a motel room to escape his advances. Now, during the cross-examination by the defense attorney, the woman said she never said no to Cleaves, but, quote, I told him I wanted to go home, end quote. Now, the judge must decide whether there is enough evidence to send Cleaves to trial on the list of charges, which are one count of unlawful imprisonment, one count of assault with intent to commit sexual penetration, one count of second-degree criminal sexual conduct, and two counts of third-degree criminal sexual conduct. And a brief update on the return of Tiger Eldrick Woods at the Hero World Golf Challenge. Tiger is 5-under through 12, 4-under for the tourney, tied for 8th place, up 6 places today. How about that? So Tiger trying to make a move. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, we are giving away a pair of tickets to the Michigan State men's basketball game against Oral Roberts tomorrow afternoon. Caller number 7. The tickets are yours. 517-355-WKAR. 517-355-9527. Call in. Call in. Call in if you want those tickets. Without further ado, let's keep this ball rolling.
Day-to-day evaluation.
No,
yeah, just got sore after the, I don't know if he twisted it or what, after the Duke game is when he said it really started to bother him. And, so they took precautionary x-rays and that. There's no broken bones or anything, but it's going to be out for a little bit.
Yes, that is how we start this Friday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I really can't believe that it's Friday. I say that every single Friday, though. I feel like a broken record every single Friday because the week just completely blows by, especially when you're busy and when you're having fun. It's been a fun week here on our airwaves, and we've got a double dose of tickets that we are going to give away. And I know many of you are calling in as we speak, and if you are not caller number 7, oh, actually, so we've had 6 callers, so we need one more. Isaac, is that right? We need one more caller. The next caller wins tickets to check out the MSU men's basketball team as they will take on Oral Roberts tomorrow at the Breslin Center. The Spartans sitting at 4-4. You just heard the voice of Tom Izzo, head coach of the MSU men's basketball team. 517-355 WKAR is the number to call, 517-355-9527. A big loss for this team as Miles Bridges, the freshman phenom from Flint, Michigan, who has been leading Michigan State in scoring, averaging a little over 16 points per game, 8 boards, playing a lot of minutes, 32 and a half minutes in the 8 games we've seen this squad in session. He also has 12 blocks and 16 assists. So, you know, you look at it and you say to yourself, my goodness, I mean, this is a squad who, as I mentioned in the headliners just a minute ago, they don't have Ben Carter, they don't have Gavin Schilling, and now you lose a Ford and Bridges. This team just became smaller yet again. This is going to be a tough coaching job for Tom Izzo. So the good thing is, in the next 2 weeks, we still won't see Michigan State play a Big Ten game. So they can if they can tread water until Bridges returns, cool. And the good thing about this is that Bridges, it's not like he broke anything, right? Right now, it looks like he just tweaked it, maybe sprained his ankle. during that Duke game, but it swelled up after the Duke matchup, and he's just not feeling good. So rest your big horse and wait for him to come back. And I think, you know, looking at the schedule, they should be favored while Bridges is out. So if they can handle business while he's out, they'll be fine, okay? But it, this does make Tom Izzo's job just a bit tougher. Isaac, we have a winner for the tickets. Is that correct? Who won the tickets?
Yeah, we do. Michael, he was very persistent in his attempts to keep calling in, and it paid off for him. We had three total callers, but Michael got five of the times, including numbers 5, 6, and 7. So
my man,
kudos
Mike.
To Michael.
Persistence, thy name is Michael. Where is Michael from?
Did not get that.
Okay, but congratulations, Mike. The tickets are yours, and we'll give you directions on how you can pick up those after the show. So we'll go lightweight on this one. We do have also in my hands here a pair of tickets for the MSU women's basketball team as they will take on Oakland. Now, we have yet to give away a pair of tickets to check out the MSU women's basketball team. So if you want to check out them tonight, it's going to be a busy, busy night here on the campus of Michigan State University, because not only do you have the women in session as they return home from a lengthy 5-game road trip to take on Oakland and host Oakland, but also right down the road, literally right down the road, a hop and a skip down the street at Jenison Fieldhouse, the MSU women's volleyball team will be hosting the first round of the NCAA Volleyball Championship. The women will be taking on Fairfield. That's right, and if they win that, they play on Saturday for a chance to possibly dance in the Sweet 16. So if you want to check out the MSU women's basketball team tonight, we'll go with caller number 3 on this one, Isaac, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. So much to get to. While you guys are blowing up our phone lines, I want to get to an interview that actually we pre-taped this morning. Now, his name is Jeremy Miller. He is the head coach of the state championship Pomona Westphalia football team. Pomona Westphalia won the program's first ever state title on Saturday, topping Detroit Loyola 28-14 at Ford Field. It's been quite a ride for this Pirates team, a team that actually, it's nice to win a state championship, but to do it in a year where you did not lose a game. Pomona Westphalia folks went 14 and a donut. Nuts, right? Nuts. So I invited Jeremy to the show to talk about the remarkable accomplishment, and we touched on a bunch of areas, including Jared Smith, who is the state rushing king, and it just blows my mind that he doesn't have a D1 school, you know, knocking on his door. Heck, I just don't get that. So good, so talented. This team, so good, so talented. Here's Jeremy Miller on the feeling of making history for that school and that community.
Well, like you said, we were so close last year, and I think the achievement just means absolutely everything, because it really does reaffirm what you teach kids and what you tell kids about, hey, if you work hard, if you do the right things, if you keep your mind to something and you really work at it, eventually, you know, you get that shot and good things can happen for you. So to me, it just reaffirms what the life lessons that we try to teach these guys. They absolutely got in that weight room the Monday after that. Last year, they were in there, they were lifting, and they've worked so hard for it that when you can actually back it up, you can say, you know, look, it really did happen for you. It's something that, you know, it doesn't get any better than that.
Now, I want to talk personally what this accomplishment means for you, Jeremy, because I saw a quote that was printed in the LSJ over the weekend, and it really just put in perspective just your road to this moment. And one of the quotes that stood out to me is when you said, quote, "I dreamt about it as a kid," end quote. Coming full circle now, what is that feeling like for you?
It's really indescribable. I mean, like you said, I really did as a kid. We had success in basketball. The basketball teams were pretty good. And you always dreamed about a state championship. You know, I played football. I went that route. And you dreamt about it. You worked at it. Unfortunately, you know, we weren't able to get there. You know, we missed out on the playoffs. We didn't even make the playoffs because of the old system and whatnot. So as a player, I never had the opportunity to even compete in the playoffs. But you just want it so bad for everybody that, you know, came before you, all the kids that have since then put in the work and the effort to get us to the doorstep, like last year's group. So to actually bring it home, to actually win it, not only is it, you know, for the guys that were on the field doing it, but to a certain extent and to a greater extent, it's to every guy who put on the helmet and the shoulder pads at PW over the last 55 seasons and really, you know, dreamt about it. It's a dream come true.
And when it comes to those players and those former coaches and former personnel that were a part of this program, when those individuals found out, and I'm pretty sure some of them were at Ford Field over the weekend, when they found out about that state championship, when they got a chance to witness that, again, the first state title in program history, what's that camaraderie like for those that you know of, especially even your teammates when you played at PW? What was that reaction like to them?
Oh, it was tremendous. I mean, I had so many people, you know, just overjoyed, just congratulating us and telling us how much it meant to them. You know, Saturday night we brought the trophy into town, and people are taking pictures with it. I mean, you had grown men taking selfies with that, you know, with that trophy, because it just meant so much. And you know, like I said, as a player, you dreamt of it, but you never got it. And to actually see kids from PW achieve something that you had worked so hard for and that you wanted so badly, it just kind of affirms it for yourself as well. And I think that did that for a lot of people.
Jeremy, I can only imagine what that day was like for you when you woke up and realized that yet again, back-to-back years, you are competing for a state title. When you got dressed, hopped on the bus, what was, can you take us from that moment, that morning when you guys got on the bus, what was the emotion, what was the mood like heading to Ford Field? And what did you tell your kids before they hit the gridiron at Ford Field to compete?
Well, it was a totally different feeling from the year before. It was much more of a business-like approach, a much more of a business-like feel, much more of a sense of being on a mission. The year before, it was new for everybody, and I think that even as coaches, we were a little bit unsure what to expect. This year, you know, getting up, I just felt very confident that this team was going to be the ones to get it done. And the whole bus ride down there, it felt honestly like we were just going to play another football game. And that was something that we tried to stress to the kids all week, that this is another football game. You've played a lot of them. You've played in a lot of big ones. This one just happens to be at a bigger stage, and it's for all the marbles, but in the end, it is a football game, and you guys know how to do that. So we tried to tell them that before the game, too, that we just go out, we do what we do, we execute the way that we have, and you'll be fine. And to their credit, they went out and they did just that.
Jeremy, how much sleep did you get on Friday night?
You know, actually, I got to be honest, I slept very well Friday night. I tried to go to bed early because we had to leave early in the morning. We left the high school at about 6:10 in the morning to get down to Detroit. But I was just so confident in this group. I knew that these guys were going to come out and they were going to play well. And you could just tell all week that it was a different feel from, you know, where we knew what we were getting into. We knew what to expect. And it was just a real business-like atmosphere. So I actually slept. I was shocked when that alarm went off and I woke up. I went, wow, I slept well. I didn't think I would, but I did.
Well, that's a good sign, right? A good omen before you hit the field for a state championship game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, what I believe is the cherry on top of this whole story is that just the fact that you all went undefeated. I mean, 14-0, culminating with the state championship. Jeremy, I'm curious to know whether or not the pressure grew as the year went on. When you guys started to stockpile those wins Friday after Friday after Friday, did the pressure grow? And if so, how did you all deal with that?
I don't know if it was necessarily pressure, but it was a sense of almost like, you know, I don't want to say urgency, but when we saw the road that we had to go through, when you look at it and you go, okay, in order to get this done, we have to beat the other four of the top five teams in that last AP poll. It was just a sense of, all right, let's get down, let's get to work, a sense of determination. And as the wins started piling up, I think more than anything, the confidence grew that this was a group that was going to meet the challenges that you put in front of it. And every single week, they did just that. It, you know, the bigger the game, the better that they played. And it was just a sense of, I think there was a little bit of destiny in there as well, that this was the crew that was going to get it done.
Winning a state championship, no matter what your record is still, that's the creme de la creme of accomplishments right there. But does it mean even more to you all, knowing that you do have that zero in the loss column?
14-0 just looks amazing. Every time I look at that record, I just go, wow, to have that zero after it is amazing. I mean, I think you'd take a state championship if you go, you know, whatever, if you have five losses, it doesn't matter. That state championship is the best, but it certainly does look amazing with a 14-0 record with it. So we're very, very proud of that.
Now I want to dive into, of course, the matchup against Detroit Loyola. You eliminated Loyola actually for a second straight year. What about that matchup has allowed you all to gain an edge?
I don't know necessarily that we have an edge over them per se. I think the last 2 years, what's really benefited us was our kids came out and played real tough, disciplined football. They were not intimidated by Detroit Loyola's size and speed and athleticism, which, I mean, they were huge. I was down there pregame, and I was just marveling at how big these guys were. I think that if you look at the way we performed against them, we were not intimidated by that, and our guys just went about their business. And in both games, both times we've eliminated them and executed our game plan pretty flawlessly. So the execution aspect, I think, is what has given us an edge over them in these last two games.
If you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with the head coach of the state championship, Pawamo Westphalia football team, the great Jeremy Miller. Now, Jeremy, a statistic that really blows my mind when evaluating what you all were able to do against Loyola is that Loyola is a team that averaged almost 43 points per game in the playoffs prior to that matchup on Saturday. They did not find the end zone until the middle of the fourth. What allowed the defense to control that aspect of the game?
Well, up front, we played really well. Our defensive line did a great job against their horses up front. So it started with them. And then from there, our linebackers flowed really well and played assignment-driven football. And then when Loyola did, you know, happen to get a little crease or they tried to throw the ball, our defensive backs were right there as well. Overall, it was just a tremendous game plan that was designed by our defensive coordinator, and the kids went out and they just absolutely executed that game plan to the best of their ability. And I think, you know, our offense obviously got a lot of press this year for what we were doing and for what Jared was doing running the ball, but our defense has carried us through some really tough games.
And speaking of Jared Smith, Jeremy, if the football guys would have came down and told you that Jared Smith would only finish with 48 rushing yards, would that have put you in a panic state before kickoff?
I would have been surprised. I don't know about a panic state, though, just because of the fact that we are so confident in what other guys were able to do. I saw it every day in practice. I know that, you know, our passing game and our receivers didn't get a lot of press and didn't get a lot of coverage and didn't get a lot of notoriety, even by probably some casual fans, because we didn't throw a whole lot. But every day in practice, I could see what guys could do with the ball and what other guys could do. So there was just a lot of confidence that if teams come in and they try to take him away after, you know, seeing it day in and day out, I knew that these guys had the ability to step up, and to their credit, they did.
So in what way did that alter the game plan? I know guys like, you know, Jimmy Lehman, he had to really step up his game when it came to that. I know Logan Hangsbach. I can list a slew of names, but in what way did that alter the game plan for you all when Detroit Loyola was able to slow down Jared Smith?
Yeah, it became apparent pretty early that they were going to have some success doing that, just with how big they were up front with their defensive line, and their linebackers were absolutely keying on Jared and going everywhere he went. So, you know, we looked at it, and I'm not just going to bang my head up against the wall and force something that isn't there. So we had some success running some other stuff with some other guys, and when you have success, you just stay with it, and that's what we did. Jared, to his credit, continued to, you know, something that I don't think gets looked at a whole lot, but when we'd run fakes to him, Jared would carry out his fake like he had the football, and he was very accepting of that role of being a decoy, because more than anything, like everybody else, he just wanted that state championship. So I give a lot of credit to him. I mean, like I said, you know, when we're doing our reads and our fakes and stuff like that, if he's not going at it 100%, it's pretty easy to tell quickly that he doesn't have the ball. So he did a great job of just sucking it up and being a decoy.
And you talk about, you know, just the notoriety that Jared Smith has accrued throughout his entire high school football career. I mean, I've seen countless articles and countless features done on him. He is the state rushing king. Jeremy, what colleges are looking at him?
right now we're getting some GLIAC interest, but overall it's been pretty slow. We're hoping that it picks up here over the next couple weeks. Obviously, some MIAA schools have contacted him as well. So he's going to have some options, I believe, and he is a kid that definitely does want to play at the next level. So we're certainly hoping that he gets that opportunity. I tell you, whoever does take a chance and offer him a scholarship is going to get one heck of a football player.
Jeremy, has it surprised you that with all of the records he's broken, I mean, again, he's a state rushing king. Has it surprised you that big name schools, you know, Big Ten, you know, just big name schools out there have not really gotten hip to possibly looking at this kid and saying, you know what, we may want to take a shot at him with our program? Has that surprised you, and why do you think that hasn't come yet?
It has surprised me. Maybe not so much the Big Ten schools not being interested, but, you know, your MAC-level schools. I can't figure it out. I mean, he's 6 foot, 205 pounds. He's football fast. You give him a football, and good luck trying to tackle him. I have no idea really what they're looking for. I think they're probably getting hung up on, like, a top-end speed 40 time or something like that. But, like I said, I mean, the kid's a football player, and if you give him the ball, good luck trying to tackle him. So we're really hoping that they realize, as we go on in this process, what a player he is, and that he gets that opportunity, because, like I said, somebody is going to get one heck of a football player.
I tell you, that is very true. Before we get you out of here, Jeremy, I have to know, throughout the duration of that game, when did you know you had it in the bag? And for you, what was it like walking out on that field knowing that history had finally been made?
Honestly, it was not until we took that final knee. I just, that clock would not run in that fourth quarter. It seemed like it was taking forever. So when we were finally able to take that knee, I took a deep breath, and, you know, when they gave me that trophy and I turned around and I looked at the unbelievable support we had from the community, and they're clapping and cheering, and I got to give that trophy to our team to celebrate with the fans. It was like nothing I'd ever felt before, and it really means the world to me, like I said, because I'm just so proud of this group and how they were able to accomplish the ultimate goal that they had.
How would you celebrate that night, Jeremy?
Well, when we got back to town, everybody was at Four Corners, so we stopped the buses and we got out and we celebrated with all the people. Then we went up to the school. They had a little assembly for us. And then that night we got together, coaching staff with our families, and we celebrated. And then we went to town, and the town was just alive and buzzing. There were just people everywhere just wanting to shake hands and just talk about the game. So it was like nothing I'd ever thought it would be. It was tremendous, unbelievable.
What a moment, what a year, what a team. And what are the chances? I mean, when you talk about next season, I know it's so early, and you guys celebrate this one, live it up. For sure, Jeremy. What are the chances that this team can repeat this kind of success next season?
Well, it's all going to depend on their dedication in the offseason. We got a bunch of guys coming back. We've got some really good, talented players. So if they get in the weight room and they lift, I think anything's possible.
Jeremy Miller, head coach of the state championship Pawamo Westphalia football team. Jeremy, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it, my man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
PW making history, and Jeremy was absolutely fantastic, and as you heard him say, I mean, this team is going to be good for a minute, folks. All right, well, we got to hit our first break, and when we come back, we'll be chatting with Chris Solari, Michigan State beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. Again, we're giving away tickets to the MSU women's basketball game. If you want them, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. MSU women's basketball will take on Oakland tonight at 7 p.m. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and it's time to bring on our second guest of the hour. His name is Chris Solari, Michigan State beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, a dear friend of the show, formerly of the Lansing State Journal. Chris, what's up, my man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, Al. How you been, man?
Always good hearing your voice, my friend. I want to start by chatting it up about the MSU men's basketball team. Yesterday during practice, we all got word that Miles Bridges has a left ankle injury and will be out, according to Izzo, quote, a couple of weeks, end quote. How severely do you believe the absence of Miles Bridges will hurt the team in the next 2 weeks?
Well, I think it hurts probably a little more long-term maybe than short-term, just because they want to develop some continuity within the flow of the offense with Bridges in there. I think that they've had some ups and downs, especially in the half court, in terms of turning the ball over, trying to find that rhythm in the sets, and really learning how to play with a smaller lineup. I mean, it's something that Tom Izzo wasn't prepared for going into the season, you know, and all the summer workouts and everything else that they did. You know, then you lose Gavin Schilling and Ben Carter, and all of a sudden your roster is a little bit different. And then now you lose Bridges, and that's another key piece to playing small. So you basically have Kenny Goins and Dick Ward as your only two bigs. And Bridges was kind of molded into that four role. You know, whether or not he's a true four or more of a three is kind of up for debate. But on this team, he's definitely a four. So I think that's the critical part. Now, with an ankle injury like that, Izzo said it was a kind of high up. So you always worry about a high ankle injury lingering. So, you know, a couple weeks, you know, at least a couple weeks is what Tom Izzo said. You know, whether that's two, whether that's three. I think the biggest key is to make sure it's not a month. That's why they're keeping him out on crutches and in a walk.
Yeah, definitely. They certainly want to approach that situation with caution. And, you know, with that being said, with Miles not in the starting lineup now, who do you foresee as that next guy to step up and try to fill that very big void?
Well, it's all, I think, based upon either matchups or kind of how Tom wants to go. And I think he's still trying to feel that out as well. I mean, you know, the question I asked him, I said, how much is this challenging your coaching? And I mean, it really is. When you have to kind of figure out a lineup with only two post players, you know, it makes things difficult. So, you know, you could see Kyle Arms just slide into that starting role. You could see him go big with Nick Ward and Kenny Goins, just move Goins over to the four. But then when you do that, if you have Goins and Ward on the four at the same time, you run the risk of maybe getting into more foul trouble. So essentially it would be maybe moving Kyle Arns as a bigger guard down to that four spot. There's no real optimal answer for it right now. I guess it's going to be a little bit of trial and error.
Yeah.
And if
there's
any time to do that, it's right now with five games at home against some lesser competition that you may or may not have struggles with.
Very true, and yeah, it's certainly going to be a plug-and-play, like you said, trial and error period for this team in the next 2 weeks with Miles being out. And now I got to bring up the month of November because it was a very challenging month, to say the least, Chris. 13,000 miles. I mean, it's a lot of miles to put on for a young team. And, you know, we saw this team play top teams like North Carolina, Arizona, Duke, Baylor. What did we learn from that trip, and what can we draw from that last game against Duke? Because, with it all being said and done, you know, this team was pretty competitive against the Blue Devils.
Yeah, and really should have beat Arizona in the opener. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you look at it and you see 4-4, and you see them bounce out of the top 25, you think, oh, man, this could be an NIT year, this could be a bubble year in the NCAA, but if you look a little deeper into it, you realize they played without, you know, real centers and had Arizona on the ropes and should have won that game. They had Duke on the ropes. You know, obviously Bridges wasn't at his best, and that wasn't exactly the healthiest of Duke teams either, with Grayson Allen struggling and then, you know, the three freshmen out. But at the same point, you know, you flip those two games, and I think fans would feel a lot better about it as a 6-2 record. But there's certainly some inconsistency in offense that we've talked about. The turnovers, especially in the half court, is something that needs adjusted. I think they've run the ball fairly well, transition. I think they've rebounded well, especially considering how small they've been. And now a big part of that was Miles Bridges with the rebounding. Mm-hmm. So you take that out, you have to get a lot more from Nick Ward and a lot more from Kenny Goins to continue that. But I think all in all, this is, you know, 4-4 with the competition they face, with the travel they face, and really the second half of the Kentucky game and the second half of the Baylor game were the two glaring spots, and I guess the Florida Gulf Coast game as well. Those 3 points, were the worst basketball they played. They played good basketball for most of that. So I think there's a lot to build on off that trip.
Yeah, very true. And you mentioned, size for this team and size really being a smaller issue than predicted in the preseason. I tell you what, a player that really stood out to me in that Duke game, Chris, was Nick Ward. I mean, he went 5 of 7, 11 points. He showed a bit of versatility throughout that game when it comes to his offensive post repertoire. What do you think about Nick Ward and where is the ceiling for his game? Granted, again, we've only seen him in 8 games, but still, I think Nick is gradually improving as the year goes on.
Yeah, the ceiling's really high, and I think Tom Izzo said that. He said, since the start of the season, no player has improved more than Nick Ward, but he also kind of puts a little caveat in there that no player had more improvement to make maybe than Nick Ward. So to be able to see him develop that quickly, though, it's certainly a good thing. Now you're seeing some defenses adjust to him. When he was a little bit lesser of a known commodity early in the year, Duke's running double teams at him. He's spinning into them, which isn't exactly what you want, coughing the ball up to the big man. He's going to have to learn how to adjust to that. I think on the defensive end as well, and that was something that where maybe he needs to make the most growth, and that was kind of what we talked about before the season. You saw Emile Jefferson kind of have whatever he wanted between Ward and Kenny Goins guarding him. I think there's definitely growth areas there, but I don't know if, it's funny because Tom Izzo, when he thought he had Deontay Davis coming back, Gavin Schilling healthy, and really even when Ben Carter came back, he thought maybe there would be a chance that Nick Ward would redshirt, but there's no reason that Nick Ward should redshirt, mm-hmm. or should have been, with the development that he had in such a short period of time, the lost weight that he had over the course of the summer, he's down around 250 now, 240, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. Learning how to play with his new body, as Tom said yesterday. And that's an adjustment, too. So, once you get a little closer to the Big Ten season, I think you may still see that growth curve going up as he adjusts to playing at that new weight.
Chris, 1-10 against Coach K and Duke. That has to get under the skin of Tom Izzo, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those things that, when he talked about it before going down to Durham, he called it a bucket list victory. It would be a bucket list victory for him. Now, you think about how close they were. They were two minutes of bad basketball away from beating Duke down there. And again, Duke was without some players, and Grayson Miller was maybe around 50-60%. But you win in that environment, another calling card for a Hall of Fame coach. But at the same point, you got another Hall of Fame coach on that other bench, too. It's pretty darn good. You got a little bit of success. It's funny because, you go into the Breslin Center, you look up, you see all the Final Four banners and all that, and all the retired numbers for Michigan State. You go into Cameron Indoor Stadium, you look up, you see that many Final Four bands, or National Championship bands.
it's
nuts. That kind of tells you the environment that you're in there and the program that you're facing. I think at some point, he's got one win over him. That's great, but it does get under his skin. He wants to beat Krzyzewski. It's funny, I've heard people kind of say, oh, he's a little too reverential to Krzyzewski and the program he's built. But I think everybody is, because that's what they want. That's what they aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you don't want to beat them. That means that when you do beat them, it is a significant accomplishment.
Without a doubt, as well as it should be. I mean, it's Coach K and Duke. The name speaks for itself. Michigan State beat writer for the Detroit Free Press, Chris Solari, has joined us here on WKAR's Current Sports. I want to shift gears and talk about the gridiron, Chris, before we get you out of here. How should we look back at this year in MSU football, and how quickly do you think the turnaround can happen, Chris?
Well, if you just look at it strictly in the context of the last 10 years of Mark D'Antonio, I think you have to look at it as an anomaly. That said, I think back to the I shouldn't say I think back to it because I wasn't alive at that point, but you look back historically at the 3-7 season that Duffy Doherty had in 1967, coming off two straight national championships, Big Ten titles, and you saw that dip, and he never quite recovered. Doherty, a little bit different of a coach in a little different era, obviously different circumstances in terms of recruiting players in the South when schools opened up down South and started taking some of his pipeline players. Mm-hmm. I think that's a different scenario in some ways, but you also have to be wary of it because, you know, what they say about people who don't know history. But at the same point, these were talented players that they brought in the last few classes. And they got really baptism under fire this year. You know, I think about guys like Mike Panashute on defensive line. He's a true freshman playing at maybe the hardest position for a true freshman to play. And by the end of the year, he's blowing up the all-conference center of the year, throwing him around like a rag doll in that Ohio State game.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
That's I think, an area of growth, you know, on both of those lines. You know, Cole Chewins, Tyler Higbee, both, I thought, played well down the stretch. They were going over top of them as redshirt freshmen. Theo Lefuso got important reps, true freshman. He comes back next year, and he'll have to show some growth, but... You know, now all of a sudden you look at those three guys plus maybe Brian, you know, plus obviously Brian Allen, who's an all-conference kind of guy. You might have four really, really good offensive linemen, even though that some of them are still sophomores, which bodes well for the long-term future and health of the program. So I don't think there's necessarily a cause for panic, I think, in a big picture. Obviously, missing a bowl game at that practice kind of hurts this team a lot. As you wanted to see that continued growth and development, even into the month of December. But now you have to just kind of readjust, and they're going to have to just hit the weight room and really build, study, and understand their performances, what they need to do better, and work on that individually right now because they can't do it as a team without the bowl game. But I think that Mark D'Antonio has earned his, I guess, currency with those last 10 years or the first 9 years. You're out of flip, but I guess we'll see come August, September, just how much this team is progressing. Really, in April, I think that the spring practice this year is going to be more important for this program, maybe than any other spring practice in D'Antonio's tenure.
Folks, we're talking to Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press, Michigan State beat writer. And Chris, I want to address this to you because I'm seeing this left and right via social media, and actually now from Jim Comperoni, publisher of Spartan Magazine. He was apparently on a radio show this morning, and it's reports swirling around that Malik McDowell's locker is cleaned out, and there's rumors that Monte Nicholson might declare. According to your sources, have you heard anything about McDowell or Nicholson saying, you know, I'm chucking up the deuces, I may be heading to the NFL? Have you heard anything like that?
Nicholson's a surprise to me, just simply because I didn't think he had that great a year in a lot of different areas. McDowell is no surprise at all. I kind of heard some things that, you know, he may be out working on his pro game now. And that's, you know, trying to get that confirmed at the moment. But, boy, you lose both of those guys. I mean, that would be significant blow. McDowell, not so much, but I think that's kind of exciting. But Nicholson, especially a veteran guy in the back end of that defense, that would be an interesting loss if that happens. I guess you're going to have to stay tuned and kind of see that. I'm actually on my way down to the MAC championship game to cover that today for the Free Press.
Ah, so, nice. That should be
like
fun.
Looks like my workload got a little busier.
Yeah, without it, I'm sure as soon as you get off the phone with us, you're going to be making a slew of calls, Chris, so I won't keep you much longer. But, you know, I want to touch briefly on Malik McDowell before we get you out of here because, you know, McDowell is a name that last year many people thought would possibly be an early to mid-round, first-round draft pick. Did McDowell hurt his draft stock this year?
I don't think so, and here's why. I think the way that Mark D'Antonio used him in the interior of the line and then bounced him outside, I think that maybe enhanced his stock a little bit. I mean, I think obviously the injury situations with the ribs and with the ankle, you may have some question marks about that. But in terms of pure talent, I think he certainly helped himself. He was facing a lot more double teams. this year.
He was.
Than you could ever imagine. And I think a lot of that, it had to do with how young those guys around him were. And he, you know, stop Malik McDowell and make the other guys beat is kind of the real thought process and game plan there. But also, I mean, you forget how good of the guys, you know, the Lawrence Thomases and Shalique Calhouns and Damon Knox and Joel Heat, those guys that are around him, you know, that he could, he's got that tape for what he does with high talent guys around him. And there's no question that Malik McDowell was an impact player a year ago. I don't think that changed at all. I think that when he was on the field, when he was healthy, that didn't change. Now, whether or not, you know, I mean, you could also see that Connor Cook question about character. I think that comes into play. You know, was he really hurt? Was he embellishing things? Was he taking plays off? I think those are things that scouts will discover through the draft process. But the difference there, I think, is when you're looking at a defensive line versus a quarterback, you look past a lot of these things. You look past them just simply to the raw and pure talent, which Malik McDowell has in abundance.
Chris, I would be remiss if I did not pose this question to you. Final question here. Again, we still have a slew of conference championship games left to play this weekend, and you're headed to one right now as we speak. Who deserves to be in the top four? And again, these are two very different questions. Who deserves to be in the top four for the college football playoff, and who do you think will be in the top four for the college football playoff this Sunday?
Well, you know, obviously with a couple of games left to play, some teams have to earn their way in still. I think Ohio State's body of work shows that they should be in there even without getting to the conference championship game. I think that's one. Obviously Alabama, probably regardless of outcome this weekend for them. And then you got the question mark, you know. Washington, I think, has played themselves in there. I really do. I think they have to win. They have to beat Colorado, but I think they've played themselves in. And, you know, even if Colorado gets a win, I think you have to consider Colorado because, you know, especially Michigan fans want to talk about, you know, what, I guess the fact that they beat Colorado, and that should be a head-to-head, but Colorado went on the road to Michigan and really was winning that game until their quarterback got knocked out. Mm-hmm. And I think people kind of forget that.
They do.
That was a different game after he went out. And they're a different team. So I think you look at maybe the first three quarters of that game and you have maybe a little bit better comparison. I think that, you know, obviously Michigan's right on the cusp of that. It's going to be an interesting, interesting Sunday without a doubt to see how they do it. You know, and I think, you know, it's funny because, you know, we talk about this whole thing and the four best teams are what's supposed to be in and records supposed to matter. Why is nobody talking about Western Michigan? I mean, they've got guys yep. that are going to play on Sundays. They haven't lost a game this year. They're not going to get there because of their schedule, because of the MAC schedule. But at the same point, it certainly begs the question of the process. If this is an 8-team format, I don't think you can keep Western Michigan out. But I do think that, you know, when you look at four and the four best teams, you probably, you know, you can understand why they're doing that. But you know, I'm curious to see. It'll be interesting to see what Michigan does. And then we haven't even talked about Wisconsin State. One of those teams are. I mean,
yeah.
Wisconsin's got two losses, and they're to Michigan and Ohio State, and they're close games. So, you know, Penn State, obviously they beat Ohio State head-to-head. So there's a lot of question marks, I think, still to be answered. And I think that, you know, how that Big Ten and Pac-12 game tonight, how those transpire and play out, I think, are going to answer a lot of those questions in the next 24 to 48 hours.
I love those points, and I love that take. Chris Solari, Michigan State beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. Chris, travel safely, my friend.
Thank you, Al. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this week's current sports by chatting about the MSU women's volleyball team, which will be, of course, underway in the NCAA Volleyball Championship later tonight, and we'll have Reflection Friday for you. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the 2-Minute Drill. I am your host, Al Martin. And as you see, we are actually on location here at Jennison Fieldhouse, home of the MSU women's volleyball team, which has earned the right to host the first and second rounds of the NCAA Women's Volleyball Championship. Now, as you see behind me, the number 9 Spartans are actually practicing, getting ready for a matchup against Fairfield tomorrow night. They win that, they can play on Saturday for a chance to dance for a possible Sweet 16 appearance. Now, head coach Kathy George, in order to mentally prepare her team, she decided to actually show her team a clip from actually my favorite movie, Gladiator.
Which scene was it?
I'm not sure. I just know that Russell Crowe came out and was like, "We're better when we stick together," and then took down everybody around them.
Whatever comes out of these gates, we've got a better chance of survival if we work together.
Shooting arrows and everybody stabbing each other is crazy, but...
In terms of preparation, Kathy, I was talking with Chloe, and you actually showed them a clip from Gladiator. Is
yes,
that
I
right?
Did. Yes, I did.
Which
we
clip?
We all stick together.
That's my favorite movie.
I love it.
We stay together, we survive.
And they have to all stick together in order to survive. And so, you know, I think the biggest message here is, you know, how do you stick together when you're going to be challenged in a lot of different ways throughout this tournament?
Single color!
Just to come out and kill, basically, do what we do, and it'll get us a win.
That's my favorite movie, so that's a good movie to watch to get you amped up, right?
Yeah, I mean, we were like, she's like, yeah!
Ah, there's nothing like some Gladiator to get you pumped up. Yeah, that's my favorite flick of all time, folks. But yeah, as you just heard, though, that was my report from the 2-Minute Drill, which you can catch each and every weekday right on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, where we give you a brief 2-minute update on what exactly is happening in mid-Michigan sports and beyond. I'll have another update in about 3 hours, so you don't want to miss that. We will also be covering the MSU women's volleyball team in the NCAA tournament, as they, again, will take on Fairfield tonight at 7:30. I'll be doing double duty. I'm going to try and catch at least the first half of the Michigan State women's basketball game against Oakland tonight. And if the MSU volleyball team moves on, another double duty day will happen for me tomorrow, because the MSU men's basketball team plays at 4:30 against Oral Roberts. And then the MSU women's volleyball team will take the court at Jennison later on that night. And many people predict that it will be Michigan State and Arizona tomorrow. So we'll see if that matchup comes to fruition. Well, we have 90 seconds left here in the show. We love to close out each and every week here on WKAR's Current Sports by reflecting on the week that was here on Current Sports and beyond. We dub it Reflection Friday. Isaac, you know, I'm gonna toss this to you, because you know what? I saw that Joe McKnight passed away yesterday, and we probably want to kill the music for this. I just want to get your thoughts, because this killing occurred in Louisiana. Just sound off, my man.
Yeah, again, it's just a case of New Orleans. I'm sure it's similar other places, but it's not that we have drugs. It's not that we have gangs. What we have is pride, and we have a survey of it. The thing is whenever somebody feels any sort of offense or indignancy whatsoever to an action, they pop off with a gun. New Orleans is about 50th in violent crimes. We're about 4th in murders. Too many families lose good men and women to this. It has to stop.
Yeah, I saw it, and my heart immediately sunk, and I saw many people voicing their opinion on it. So rest in peace, Joe McKnight. All right, we close out the week, folks. We'll see you on Monday. Be easy, people.